And you look at it and you think, well, this and this, and then, well, maybe this and this and this too. And sometimes people check them all, and then sometimes people look at them and they really don't see anything. And so everyone is different. But I like to do that because it's just like a little exercise, a little questionnaire for you to kind of do an evaluation of things that, and just identifying things that do trip. The next, what I want to show you is the information that you put in those boxes when it had like box one, box two, box three. The experiences were that you wrote in box one. That's what you would put in this box. And what I typically do is I will describe, okay, if someone gets, they start shutting down, when someone gets angry, someone is critical, someone is judgmental, someone starts bossing them, and they find themselves shutting down. I'll have you list the things in the boxes that correspond with the questionnaire. And there's like, there is the area of the experience that I had, and then there's also what caused it. And oftentimes, there's a story behind each one of those kind of events. It's like there was a boy one time who had, he was very challenged with being accepted, and he was around 12 years old, I think, and he was all together with his family, and he had a brother-in-law and his dad was sitting down, and they were playing a game of chess together, and he was bored, and he had no one to really play with or to do anything with. And so he asked his mom and his sister if they would be willing to play a game of rook. So they sat down, just the three of them, and they were playing rook and really having a good time, just enjoying just even frivolous bidding and not being all that serious about it. The chess game ended, and the brother-in-law came over and noticed the hand of this boy who was taking or attempting to take the bid, and then started criticizing and saying, there's no way that you could take it with the hand that you have and with what you're bidding. And he kept riding on this boy to the point that he shared that the feeling inside starting to rise up. And he got he felt his neck get red, and he started feeling hot, till finally he slammed the cards down, he jumped up, and he ran out of the room and out of the house, just screaming. And it was pouring down the rain outside, and he walked in the rain for about a half a mile, and he stood under the eave of a little store that was closed. And he stood there. And he shared, he just pondered, where should I go? And the feeling in his heart was that I'm not going back. That this had pushed me over the edge. Okay, so that experience, you could write in the first box that someone criticized me, someone pressured me, someone stressed me, someone was rejecting or disrespectful to me, and then you could write out as a cause or as the one that was behind that was this circumstance. And I'm not here to try to highlight all these different circumstances, but it's really nice just to know where it came from, and the reason is this. If there is an ill will or a feeling toward an individual that has wounded us in some way, there's only one way to resolve that, and that's to be willing to pay a price. And the price is forgiveness. And the only way you're going to be able to forgive someone is if you can identify that they hurt me and be willing to own that. So that's the reason we do that. So you list your experiences, the cause of the emotional pain, and then you list the feelings down in the box too. There you're going to put all of those feelings that you checked, and they're as a result of someone causing us to feel this kind of pressure. Over in the box beside of box two, you have another box. And what and as you noticed in that second box where you have the feelings, out from that, you have other words that are describing or expressing a deeper definition or clarity to that feeling. For instance, abandonment, you have alone or feeling alone. When you take all that, all of those phrases that are beside the feelings and you put them in box three, what those are they start to become exaggerated lies that you start listening to or believing as a result of the feeling that someone caused you. And then the tendency is to react by using the things in that third box that goes in box four that I tend to disassociate, I detach, I get quiet, I just go to work, and that's a tendency and where you tend to go. And what I tend to do then is when you draw a line, like I just put here, you can't change the way people are going to act toward you. People are going to do all of the things that you checked in those boxes and more, perhaps. You're going to feel pressure from them. You're going to feel challenged by that pressure. You got an angry person and you have to deal with them. And they have the potential to get angry again. And you won't change that person. And a lot of times what happens is, and I've had people come in my office and they'll say, well, I'm here because my wife has problems and I'm really here for her. And we need to get this fixed. Or it could be vice versa. And it's like, I can't change that person. And the thing is, as a spouse, you can't change them either. You're not going to be able to change or make an adjustment on any of that. But what you can do is you can decide how you're going to deal with it and what you're going to do in response to it. That's where you can make a difference. Now, I draw this line because you're not going to change how someone treats you. Neither are you going to change your feelings. If I lie to you, you're going to feel betrayed by me. It's a given. I done you wrong. And you're going to feel that way. You're not going to be able to stop that feeling. Now, you might look into your own life and think, well, I shouldn't have any feelings that are ill toward anyone. But you did me wrong, and it made me feel betrayed. You withdrew from me and pulled away from me, and I felt rejected by you. And we're going to have those feelings. You're not going to be able to change them. Those are kind of a given. You're going to have times when people cause you to feel a certain way. And that's why I draw this line. You won't change things in box one or box two. But the things that are in box three and box four can all be adjusted. Because what tends to happen is we will have the feeling in box three as a result of what happened in box one, and I hope I'm not confusing anyone, and then we'll extrapolate out of that feeling something that is exaggerated or further. I feel betrayed, therefore, I can't trust anyone. Is that true? That's not true. It's a lie. But the enemy wants you to believe the lie based on the feeling that you have. He's wanting you to believe that I can't trust anyone because one person betrayed me or did me wrong. And he wants you to live in that sense that I can't really open up to anyone. And then you tend to go to box four down below, or which is three on your questionnaire. I think it does say box four up above it. And in that, you tend to go to your defaults in the way you react. And you pull back. But we want a room of grace. We want a safe place. And that's what we do when people come. That's what we really try to gain, is a safe place for their heart, a place where they can rest and they can know that it's okay. And God can really affirm in them that he is trustworthy, that he is safe for them, that he will be there for them in any circumstance that they face. And one of the things that really comes as a very clear grasp of that is the fact that someone lies to you, so you cop the attitude that I can't trust anyone. And you know, obviously it's a lie, because God's looking at you and say, what do you mean? You can't trust me? Did I lie to you? I didn't lie to you. Then why are you reacting like everyone in the world is a liar? You're reacting because of the feeling that's there. But if you choose to go to the safe place, which is directly below where your feelings are, instead of extrapolating out of those feelings to be something that they're really not, and you go to where God has given you a place where you can hold, where he'll hold your heart. I led a young girl in prayer. She was so depressed that she couldn't look at you. She would look down just like this. You asked her a question, she'd look up and answer, and she'd look right back down. She was shy. She was timid. On the TJTA test that I gave her, she scored 98% depressed. And she had a lot of pain in her heart. And we led her in a prayer, and we prayed for an hour. And we would pray, Jesus, do you love me? Jesus, do you care about me? Jesus, do you see me? When you see me, what do you see? Jesus, can you give me some affirmation? Jesus, how would you speak into a heart that's been wounded, that's been damaged? Jesus, do you really even care? Are you there for me? Jesus, would you open my heart? We prayed, and we would just pause. Oftentimes, that's what we do when we lead a person in a prayer. We'll pause, and I'll just ask them, what come to you? What really came come to you or spoke to you in that moment? She would always say, nothing. Nothing. She didn't get anything. No thought. I said, you didn't think anything? There was nothing? Nope. Didn't get anything. So we took a break. And this was early in when I started this whole ministry. And I was a little bit challenged by some of that. I thought, you know, maybe this just doesn't work in every case. Maybe this is a little bit of a, you know, an extraordinary thing. And so we took a break. And we were at a conference, so we only had 3 hours with this young girl. She had a young mother in the community there that was willing to sit in with her, because that's the way we do it with single females. And we came back and we prayed, and I forget what we even prayed. Jesus, will you show me how much you love me or something? And she didn't get anything. But the lady sitting there said, I got a thought. I just got a thought of how Jesus would care for a little girl's heart, and he would just pick her up and set her on his lap and hold her. And I remember this girl was looking down, and then she just looked over at that young mother and then looked back and said, you're just saying that to be nice. And the problem is that she couldn't let anyone in. And pain oftentimes will cause a person to not be able to connect with the Lord. It's like it's too great, it's too heavy, it's too much, and they can't get through that. We continued to pray, and then she started crying. And I asked her what was going on. And she said, I don't know if it was, you know, I don't know what it means or what it was, but I just got this thought. This thought just came to me, and I seen Jesus, and he was crying. And he was standing in front of a little girl. And her face was all covered in makeup, and he came over, and he just wiped the makeup off of her face, and he whispered, you don't have to hide from me. I accept you just the way you are. Now, where did that thought come from? She thought, you know what she said? Could just be my imagination, but let me just share this with you. The Bible talks about and teaches us that we're to cast down every high thing, every imagination, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. But what about thoughts where the Lord speaks into our heart, and he brings comfort through that? She started crying. She started feeling something. And that's where I see the difference in some imaginative thought versus a real experience of someone being in touch personally with what they are bringing in that moment. And it made a huge difference in this girl's life. As a matter of fact, that evening I was speaking in the church. It was two of us doing this conference, and I was the first one to speak. And as I stood there, and people started coming in that evening, I noticed her come in and sit down with a group of young girls, friends. And then I noticed this young mother with her children and her husband. They came in, they sit down on the far other side of the sanctuary. And this girl got up and she walked to the back and came around and moved in and sat down beside this young mother. It's like when you walk with someone, you have an experience with them, and it was a moving experience. And you can just tell, you could see in the countenance that this depression that was so obvious, it wasn't near as clear or vivid. As a matter of fact, I've had people ask their spouse in the office before, "Where's your depression?" And they can't find it. They don't feel depressed right now. And why not? Because they feel comfort. They feel safe. They feel like that in some way God has provided something for them. Can I explain that? I can't. Can you? I don't think you can. How can you really explain what happens in the heart of a person when God brings comfort or he transforms? Can you do that? I don't think that. I've not really heard how anyone, we can give a concept of what happens. We can share what we perceive is going on here and maybe the steps that's taken for that to occur. But what really happens when a person changes from a frown to a smile? How does that, how do you explain it? And I can only attribute that God is working in the life of that person. So there's root causes to conflicts. There's emotional issues. And emotional issues, they come in the way of feelings. They're emotions. They're going to be feelings of being all alone, of being betrayed, not valued, not loved, being emotionally drained, humiliated, and rejected. Now, what do you do with feelings like that? They're going to come. There are going to be instances where you are going to deal with certain feelings unless you're so numb or detached that you're just not even in touch with what's going on in your own heart. Can you confess them as sin? I don't want them. I don't even want them to come here. But yet we have them. So what do we do with them? It's been my experience that the only thing that we can do with emotional issues is we have to accept the person where they are. We seek to understand what they've experienced, and we be willing to care about it. That we just show them that I'm willing to care about you. I want you to be able to feel that. We didn't choose it. I would rather it didn't happen. I really don't want to feel this way. And there's a root cause. It's at the core. It needs healing. But how do we do it? How do we get into that deeper part? And it's simply by, like I just said, we accept, understand, and we care. And here's a scripture that says, "He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds." And God is able to do that. Again, I just underscore, if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't do this. And it's worth it. It's kind of like what I do is like an in-state missionary. I sit in my office and I watch people in a very private manner. It's almost like we're entering into a closet because people's lives are personal and they deserve the privacy and the dignity of not having everything exposed. But it's kind of like that little story of the boy walking along the beach and the star fish and picking them up and throwing them in, but there's so many, and the person asks, "You think it's really going to make any difference?" And he picks up one and throws it in and says, "Made a difference to that one." If it would make a difference just with one person, isn't it worth it? Really, I believe the Lord was willing to go the distance for all of us, and he's able to take care of every need, but all of us have issues and areas that we have a need. There's also spiritual issues, and we're going to talk some about those. Spiritual issues can be a result of feelings that we have inside. They produce an attitude, and then they translate into a behavior, which can be sometimes a wrong behavior, and it can produce sin. And I know there are times where people just choose. There's a certain pleasure in sin, and people choose that perhaps as a way of escape and just finding their own little place of being able to check out. But oftentimes, people are drawn there, and there are things that is more at the core of what's driving it. Sin issues like bitterness, rebellion, immorality, pride, self-focus, anger, and indifference. Those are things that I do choose. I choose to do that. It's like maybe I don't like where I'm at in that, but I still choose it, and I wished I didn't. Or maybe I don't wish I didn't. It's just the way it is, and it's where I'm at. It's like a symptom. When someone comes in and they say, we've got a big problem in our marriage. My husband was unfaithful, and there's been an adultery. I don't address the adultery. I want to understand what happened. There's a case, there's a pastor from Southern California, and he's part of a big mega church, and he shares a little their testimony. They share it on YouTube. And in that testimony, there was a situation to where they had taken in this student that was getting his master's degree, and he was Hispanic, and they had a room in their home, and he lived there. And he would go to class, and he would come from class around 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon when this pastor's wife was at home. And he would come in, and it would just be a matter of, how was school today? How'd class go? How was the exam? Would you like a snack? She would put something out on the counter. And they would spend a half hour or so just kind of talking. She was lonely because she had a busy husband, and he was gone. And he was really involved in all about work at the church. And as they share this testimony, and I'm getting down to one primary point in this whole little analogy or this little story. This continued to the point where this housewife actually shared that she looked forward to this young man coming home in the afternoon. She was there all day. She had no adult communication, no conversation with anyone. It was kind of a way out. But in that, then, they emotionally started developing a feeling, which resulted in going further and becoming physical. And it was like a one-time thing, and she got pregnant. And now they had this huge problem, or she had a huge problem, because she's very Caucasian, and so is her husband. But she knows that she is pregnant with this other man's child. Immediately, she didn't even really debate it. She went right to her husband. He was devastated. They share all of this in their testimony. It was like, he said, the ministry's ruined. Everything that we've worked for, everything that we've really contributed our life to or committed to is going to all be a waste. And he became angry, resentful, and he didn't know which way to go. And through the process of people on the church board and those behind the scenes helping with all of this, they were able to work through it through some counseling and various ways, but he felt just a tremendous calling to step away from the ministry and step down. Someone asked him a question. Can you pinpoint any time in your married life where the door would have been left open a crack for even something like this to happen? And he responded immediately. He said, I know exactly when it happened. He said, it happened when my wife was in Bible school and I was in seminary. We were dating each other, and we made a commitment to each other that as a couple, we would pray together every day. And he said, somewhere along the way, our life got busy. It got interrupted. I got totally involved in the church and the ministry that God was building, and we quit doing that. He said, I think that was the day that we left the door open for Satan to come in. We do choose it, but it's like a symptom. We can tend to pinpoint and we can tend to attack it, that this is the wrong it is. What makes it wrong is it's a sin against God. It's a sin that we've defiled ourselves in. It needs cleansing. It needs to be taken care of. And there's only one way to deal with sin, and that's simply to confess and repent. To just take it to the Lord and let Him have it. Confess your faults one to another, that you may be healed. Here's a picture of what I call a destructive heart cycle. First, you have a feel or an emotional pain. Something happens. We could use the illustration of this couple. Maybe she felt lonely. Maybe she felt her husband was detached. Maybe she felt like that the ministry was more important in his life than what she was. So she had an emotional pain. And she closed the heart to cover the pain. Okay, I got to deal with it. So I'll just live with it. And I'll just try to do the best I can with what I have. And then sin entered into the camp. It left her open and vulnerable and exposed. And she fell into a trap. And she was caught in that trap. Now she feels guilt and shame. And it has a destructive effect on a person. And then she repents and she confesses. And as they shared the testimony, they both were together and they showed a picture on the screen. And they had all of their family, and here was this Hispanic young boy, and he was all part of their family. And they had embraced him as if it was his own. And so repentance and confession, and then there's cleansing. But then another pain comes along, and the cycle continues. And it just goes around and around and around, unless somewhere someone takes the initiative to care about that pain. It just leaves things open and vulnerable, and Satan has a heyday. He loves it. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. It's like, maybe someday. We have a little saying in our home that, you know, I just know someday the ship's going to come in. My wife will oftentimes say, you know, maybe we need to just start swimming out to meet the ship. And take an initiative to make something happen. Here's a little issue I'll just share kind of as a reflection of things that can really happen. We have a painful memory. We have something that has really affected us. My wife's core pain is neglect. She lost her father when she was 12, and they had a family business. Her father had an excavating business, several pieces of equipment, and her mother continued to run the business, had good men under them, but it took a lot for a single mother then. And at 12 years old, she felt neglected. Oftentimes, she would stay after school, maybe do something extracurricular. The promise would be that I'll be there at 5 o'clock to pick you up. She's been there before at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and still, here I am waiting. And that's just kind of how it worked. My emotional pain is rejection, a feeling of just not being accepted, of someone not receiving me, or me not being respected. So we decide to get married. So here you have this neglected heart and a rejected heart. And we decide to get married. Now, when we look at this box, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take a moment, and I want to list some of the things the trigger points that can tend to start closing our heart in box one. And this can be something, and then I want to look at what causes it. in box two. The feeling then that is derives from that, how we start believing in our heart, and then where we tend to go in a default in reacting to it. And not thinking about what we were doing in the way of blocking that and going to that room of grace. So in box one, this is her heart journey. We have an experience. He left me. We went to a conference when we were dating, and she didn't know anything. This was a whole new culture for her. Huge event, lots of people. So we roll into the parking lot. We're dating, but we are planning for marriage. And we walk up into the crowd of people, and I just step right forward. We see people we know, and I'm just starting visiting like I normally would. But I don't realize that my wife feels really insecure, and what she's thinking is, he just left me. He just walked away from me. It's all about, you know, his friends and who he knows, and I'm kind of a stranger here. And he doesn't realize what's going on inside. I'm feeling very, very insecure. He neglected me. I stepped all over her heart. Didn't even know it. Didn't even see it happening. And I just caused her to feel like that I left her all alone. She started feeling left out, not valued, not loved, and not important. Now, as she starts feeling that, she starts believing, I don't have any value, or I'm worthless. I don't really matter. And I feel insignificant. Now, is that the way someone preparing for marriage and they're there with their fiancé and we're kind of developing more in love, is that how really they ought to be feeling? But I didn't see it happening. I didn't know that was what was going on inside because I didn't understand her core issue. I didn't understand what neglect she had experienced. I didn't know how that pain had affected her heart. And by the way, she doesn't really like me talking about us, but I think she's okay with if it can help someone else. She emotionally detaches or pulls back. I don't know what's going on. I'm speaking to all these people, and then all of a sudden, well, okay, let's roll on over here, and then the next thing I know, I feel this coolness. It's like, what in the world's wrong? Where did that come from? And she gets frustrated. I wouldn't say she got angry. She didn't throw anything at me or anything, but she's frustrated. And she doesn't talk. What's wrong? Nothing's wrong. But it's wrong. And I can tell it's wrong. And she becomes self-focused on these inner feelings, and she's in this group of all this multitude of people, and she feels isolated and all alone. And I'm the one that really stepped on her to make her feel that. Now, this is kind of how my response is in that. This is my journey. I sense the coldness. Emotionally, she's left me. My feeling, I feel all alone now. I feel insecure. Uh-oh, got one off here. Not valued and rejected. You remember what my core pain is? Rejection. Hey, she just, in her reaction to me, she just stepped all over my heart. Do you see what I'm trying to get across here? See how it can happen so simply, and what I'm trying to do is describe the things that begin to happen, but we tend to look at it from we look at it through the lens of our perspective, and we are unable to see really clearly what the deeper part or what might be going on here. So my feeling is, wow, I can't do anything right. I'm always messing up. I mean, I got to get it together. I don't measure up. I'm never good enough. She don't really care about me. Are we making a mistake here? I don't know. And you can just start having those extrapolated feelings that come out as lies that you start believing. It's not true, but it's what we what we start believing because of what we feel. And then I react. I emotionally, well, if she's going to act like that, I can get cool too. And so I pull back. I get angry or frustrated. Why is this happening? I defend myself. Look, we came here. There's friends here. We can't just ignore them. We need to interact, right? And so I'm starting to defend myself, and I don't even realize, and she's probably saying, yeah, you're right. Because she's not going to argue the point, because she feels neglected already, and in a sense, she doesn't really feel heard. She doesn't feel like that I see her or that I care. And then I begin to self-focus. I've got to be self-preserving here. This is going to take me down. I'm not going to give in to this. And so then I just kind of pull the switch too, and I can play hardball. You see what I mean? And then here we are, these two people that are in love, we've decided to get married. But we're kind of, we're all detached from each other. And I walk away. And this kind of right here is a picture of what can result when you have circumstances like that. And I don't know if you can read that, but it says, apparently I've done something to upset you. And then everything's cool. And you try to reach a pinky through razor wire. So what we want to do is we want to identify how a person was damaged. I need to understand. I never knew that. I was really naive. I acted in many ways, and my wife, I think, would validate it. I was a real jerk. I didn't know how to treat her. I didn't know how to really see her and to really listen to her and value her as a person. I thought we had it all together, and I thought, hey, it's just like boy meets girl, and we're good, right? And everything's cool. But it didn't really work like that, and I didn't understand things about her until I started really digging deeper and asking her questions. And I started hearing some of the pain. I started hearing some of her story, and it really started to resonate and click with me. And it started to make a difference. I began to identify how she had been damaged. Then I realized, wow, I'm damaging you too. I'm stepping all over you. I don't want to hurt you. I want you to feel cherished by me. I want you to feel loved by me. So I sought, you seek to understand how they reacted. What was it that caused them to react that way? And you care about that pain. You lead them to resolve the pain through prayer, and then you make a safe place so their pain can heal. You actually provide something for them to know that I want to listen to your heart, and I want to make it safe for you to be able to unload that. And I'm not going to chop you up. I'm not going to jump all over you. I'm not going to try to defend myself or make this different, and so it all turns back to me in some way and you become neglected. Now, just take a look at this. She, in box one, she felt ignored. She felt neglected. In box two, she felt left out and not valued, not loved and not important, and then the lies. I have no value. I don't matter. I feel insignificant. And then her reaction. But then if she, instead of going with those feelings to that bunch of lies, she goes into the room of grace, and I start caring about her, what I'm doing is reaffirming something that she already knows intellectually, and really we want her to be able to experience that in her heart, that she's understood. And so when I start listening to her, she starts feeling understood. She starts experiencing God's provision for her, that God loves her, that God hasn't isolated her. God sees value in her. He sees her as being significant, that she has purpose, that she was created just like a snowflake, special in his eyes. And she believes that God has provided, that he cares about her, and that he's not going to leave her stranded or isolated or alone, and she can rest in God's love. She can know that God is there. Now, all of those things, I want to go back. All of those things are truths, and intellectually we can all grasp that. But sometimes a person needs the affirmation of that to really, for it to sink, for it to really get in and to go deeper inside. And so we want to speak to them. We want to affirm them. We want to reassure them. The same thing, as she starts to respond then, I feel acceptance from her. I feel understood. And that's going to result in my feelings then. I'll feel accepted versus the rejected that I feel. I feel close as opposed to being distant. And I'll feel secure versus insecure. And my heart is going to open to her. And I cancel out all those lies that I start believing. And it's all because we took time to try to understand each other. If you notice his box 4, he was emotionally detached. He got angry, he defended himself, and he was self-focused. And what was happening in her box 1, what trips her up when she's ignored? I walked away. When someone ignores her, she feels neglected. What did I do? I walked away. I just made her feel more neglected, more of what was really inside. He neglected me. And in her box, she emotionally detached, got angry, stops talking, and she self-focused. And that basically stepped on the sense of coldness that he felt, that he was emotionally left. And she just left him hanging. And there they were, and both stepping on each other's heart. It's like no one really cares until they know just how much you care. God wants us to be able to experience a close oneness with him. Now let's just take about a 5-minute break and stand up and stretch, get a glass of water, coffee back here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about spiritual issues.